What are concepts and what kind of role they have in science? When should they be defined and how should they be defined? So the male emphasis in this my section is on this side. But there are also six slides related to these questions. How are concepts understood in survey research and what kind of role they have in it? And when should they be defined in survey research and how should they be defined in it? So I will tell you something about also that side. We start with concepts and their role generally in science. I should probably mention that with this term science, I don't mean just natural sciences. I mean also humanities, arts and humanities, and social sciences, and so on. So generally, in all scientific disciplines, what are concepts and what's their role? Well, it isn't easy to answer very shortly, but they are kind of basic building blocks of science. Theories, hypotheses, models, conceptions, and so on are built of them. If you think of life more generally, they are kind of basic building blocks of thinking and practically all cognitive processes. So in thinking, we connect concepts and analyze them, and they give structure, the rational structure to thinking. According to one popular approach, concepts are mental representations of worldly things, and one essential task for science is to define them so that definitions reflect essential properties and relations of those things. Okay, there are many rivaling theories about concepts, about their ontological natures, and also about their structures, but this is kind of a traditional way how concepts are thought in science. It's a kind of a picture illuminating the idea which was presented in the previous slide. Okay, when should concepts be defined generally in science? Well, I cannot give you kind of a straight rule when you should do it. Instead, I give you a list of things you need to consider when you are kind of pondering whether or not to define some concept. So a list of things you need to consider. Is there a widely shared policy in your field in regards to definitions? Most, if not all, have such widely shared policies or practices. If you are just starting to make your PhD, then perhaps your supervisor can tell you about what are the standard conventions concerning when to define concepts in your own field. But in most fields, concepts are defined at the beginning of publications, for instance. That's quite common practice in many fields. You are supposed to define the key concepts of your research. Also, you need to consider how different are the previous definitions. When you have been conducting the literature review, you should also give some attention to definitions given to your to concepts that are important for you. How different are they? If they are very different, meaning that the concept is used in many different ways in your own field, then you probably should give a definition. which clearly states how do you understand the concept. Also, if there are rivaling schools or paradigms in your field, it might be that they define the concept differently. In that case, too, you might need to define the concept. It kind of reveals your position also and your angle and your kind of approach. Is the concept public common knowledge and common property in your field? Some concepts are thought to be such that everybody knows them, what they mean. And in that case, you don't need to define the concept. Which concepts are such? Again, this is a discipline-specific question, and perhaps your supervisor can help you in that respect. How important is the concept for your research project? Is understanding it in a certain way, in the right way from your perspective, a precondition for understanding your research questions, the whole research design, or perhaps your hypothesis? If it is that important, then it's a good idea to give a clear definition for it. To what kind of audience are you writing or talking? Of course, if you are writing or talking to people who are not experts in your own field, you probably need to give more definitions, explain some of the basic concepts of your field. How much does the scientific usage of the concepts differ from its everyday usage? If there is a big difference, if you are using the concept is in a very unintuitive way, or it's very exciting new kind of a definition for it, then it is a good idea to define it. And also in multidisciplinary projects, might your partners from other disciplines understand it differently? This often is the case. Even such basic concepts as, let's say, a model of theory, science, even those kinds of basic concepts are understood very differently in different fields. So it is often a good idea in multidisciplinary research projects to kind of clarify the basic concepts so that everybody understands them in the same way. How should concepts be defined? There are discipline-specific differences. Some disciplines emphasize some things, other disciplines little other things, but I'm trying to kind of give a formula that fits for most disciplines, if not all. I'm not sure really. If this isn't a good formula for you, then you should bring it up and we can discuss it. But here's a kind of a model how concepts can be defined. It's very condensed presentation. So stop me if you don't understand some point. I'll try to explain it further. But usually it's a good idea to start by thinking what is the purpose of the definition, to what kind of work I will put the definition in my research project, or to what kind of work the definition is put perhaps in the society outside of my research. So you really need to think about those kinds of questions too. Depending on the answers, you might end up giving different types of definitions. You might end up emphasizing different values related to definitions. You can optimize different values by giving different types of definitions, for instance. Also, you can justify often why you don't take into consideration all possible previous concepts. You only take a part of them because only that part is relevant in the context of your own research. So start by answering this question: what is the purpose of my definition? How I'm going to use it in my work? It is related to this second question: what kind of definition it is? Is it a real or nominal definition? Is it a descriptive definition, explication, or stipulation? Real definitions, with them we try to kind of capture and list essential features of the thing that is defined. We try to capture its essence in a way, or its identity, what characteristics it has. With a nominal definition, we are just trying to express a social convention concerning how some concept is used. So the realism as a kind of a philosophical approach strongly influences behind real definitions, and some form of relativism fits well. Let's say nominal definitions are used at its site. What is the descriptive definition? It describes existing usages of some concepts, how it is used in some discourses. Explication picks up some usages, for instance, from that perspective that in the context of my research, these usages, these meanings, this subgroup of usages is important. So one of the all the meanings of the concepts is kind of explicated by these types of definitions. And stipulation, you create entirely new concept. That's rare, I guess, in science, but sometimes you have to do even that. Okay. Third step is to gather all previous definitions which you can find. Also, it might be good to ponder the differences, what kind of factors might explain them. Perhaps there are different schools or paradigms, and they explain why some definitions are different. And then you need to pick your side. But it's good to know that by choosing a certain definition, you have picked your side. Together, these previous definitions give you all possible attributes that have previously been associated with it, with this concept, with this thing that you are defining. What are attributes? Well, if concepts are basic building blocks of theories, for instance, then attributes are kind of basic building blocks of concepts. They are properties, features of the thing that we are defining, its relations to other things. Okay, those are attributes. After you have gathered the attribute from the previous definitions, you can try to invent some more. Do you think that is there some property in the thing you are defining that the previous definitions have not captured? Is there some such property or perhaps relation? Can you yourself imagine new attributes? Okay, then the next step is to start evaluating those attributes one by one. You need to figure out which ones of them are defining in your research context, or essentialist, another word sometimes used. Which ones are essential and which ones are accidental, meaning that they might be properties of the thing in a certain context, but they are not necessarily its properties in every possible context. It may help to ask this heuristic question in case of each attribute. What happens if I strip away this attribute from the thing that I am trying to define? I try to imagine it without it. Does it seem to lose something essential to its identity? By definition, we are kind of, in a way, trying to capture the identity of something. Can you still separate it from other reminiscent things? Definitions, of course, they are also related to recognition, how we recognize things, separate them from other relevant things. Okay. Am I moving too fast? If you want to define your concept in the strictest possible way, analyze the logical structures of previous definitions and the logical nature of the attributes in order to fix an explicit logical form for your definition. When you do something like this and use the notation of logic, you end up, for instance, to these kind of definitions. But fortunately, this much of precision is not needed in most cases. So this is tough for logic and also for highly formalized sciences. Anyway, it might be good to ponder the logical nature of the thing you are trying to define. Is it a kind of a thing? Is it a living thing? Is it a property? Is it a relation? If it is a relation, what are the relata of the relation? And so on. Those kinds of questions have to do with the logical form of the thing. Is it a function? Is it a relational concept? And so on. One-placed predicate, a two-placed predicate. It might help you to clarify the contents of the thing or the definition. The seventh point in this model is that while developing the definition, remember that you are supposed to avoid circularity and metaphorical expressions in definitions. One of the portfolio tasks for the theory of science course is that you are supposed to define the concepts. And I think the biggest mistake in the typical definitions of postgraduates is this circularity. The same word that you are trying to define somehow is, you can find it also from the definition. That's a kind of a circularity you should avoid in definitions. And also metaphorical expressions. Yes, you can use them perhaps in some disciplines, in teaching, for instance. They work intuitively well in many contexts, convey lots of information. But in the end, you should open them up, explain them. And you should not use them in definitions. And one more point, if you can use positive terms instead of negative ones, you're well advised to do so. Positive terms tell what something is, what kind of properties it has, what kind of relations it has. Negative terms tell what something is not, what kind of properties it doesn't have, and so on. And the problem with negative properties is that they don't convey as much information as positive properties. They rule out some possibilities, but there is infinite amount of other things they could be. So positive terms convey more information and in that way help to understand better than negative ones. Okay, now you have ended up with a set of defining or essential attributes with their logical form. This set composes the body of your definition. The next step simply is to write it out. A good thing to do next is to test it against various cases, case types, and in survey research it's very good to have empirical cases because then you get closer to operator analyzation and to that kinds of questions. At least you should construct a model case with kind of a ideal basic which illustrates a kind of ideal basic instance of the definition. But also it might be useful to construct contrary and borderline cases. And in fact, Walker and Evant, which are my references here, they separate also some other case types that might be useful. So these kind of tests might help you to refine the contents of the definition. Perhaps you notice that in some case, in contrary case, for instance, something happens that you don't want to happen. You have to modify your definition. So you may have to go back and rewrite the definition. Okay. To develop further your analysis, identify both antecedents and consequences of your definition. What your definition presupposes, what kind of presuppositions it has. It always has such. What kinds of consequences, to what kind of consequences it leads in the context of your research, but perhaps also in society more generally. These are again ways to test your definition. It might be useful to make a map out of the conceptual surroundings of your concept, to what kind of family of concepts it belongs to. Again, its contents might be kind of elaborated this way. How it differs from other concepts that come close or somehow belong to the same family of concept than your concept. And you can write these kind of conceptual maps with some programs. Drawing such a map might help you in the early phases of defining concept, might help you actually help you to make the definition. So you could even start by writing a conceptual map. And lastly, identify the key empirical reference for your critical attributes, to which real things, processes, relations in the world they refer. And this is a especially important step in the context of survey research, because when we continue from this we start with the operationalization. And if you do this carefully, you are only halfway already there. It helps you to do the operationalization. If one of them is not doesn't make sense, really sense in your own in the context of your own research, of course you just skip it. It's clear that you cannot go too deep. I think Jari will say that in the end we are not really interested in concepts. We are interested in the phenomena and perhaps in theories. And so one good advice is that you shouldn't dwell too much with concepts, but is it a couple of or three rounds with them that makes sense? I don't think there are general rules. What works in the context of your research is the important thing, and also when you're testing your survey questionnaire, you are kind of that might be one question you are testing. Have you explained the key terms enough? So there's also this side of empirical research that you can utilize in order to answer that question. Check when you have given enough of information so that the answers of the respondents are proper. But basically, in principle, you could continue that forever. And it's a real practical problem. In survey research, concepts belong to a specific phase of research project, that is conceptualization that takes place before operationalization. And this is how the key terms are defined by a very famous survey researcher, a teacher of survey methodologies, Joop Hoks. A theory is a set of interrelated concepts, constructs, definitions, and propositions that present a systematic view of phenomena by specifying relations among variables with the purpose of explaining and predicting the phenomena. Okay, predicting, that's not so usual in human sciences, but anyway, quite a good definition for theory in certain kinds of contexts. Where I think his context is the context of social sciences. Conceptualization involves concept formation, which establishes the meaning of a construct by elaborating the nomological network and defining important subdomains of meaning. What is a nomological network? Nomos is law, basically. So we are talking about law-like relations things have between them. In human sciences, we're talking about statistical laws, not natural scientific laws. And also operationalization. Okay, Jari will talk more about that, so perhaps we just skip it. One important and interesting thing was that Hoks separated concepts from constructs. I believe that this is not always done in survey research, but in some context it is done. A concept is an abstraction formed by generalization from similar phenomena or similar attributes. A construct is a concept that is systematically defined to be used in scientific theory. And I think here comes the important points. Concepts are used in the sense that I was talking about earlier. Are used in early stages of theorizing, where constructs are used in theoretical research, proper theoretical research, as more formal scientific concepts. So constructs are certain types of concepts in Serb research, if I have understood this right. Hawks, Edith, Deleuve and others point out that Serb methodologists have given much attention to problems of formulating the actual questions, but much less attention has been directed at clarifying the problems that occur before the first survey question is committed to paper. So they would like to have more attention to these kinds of conceptual questions. Actually, they compare constructing a survey to constructing a house. When designing and constructing a survey, one should also lay a well-thought-out foundation. One starts with preparing the underground by specifying the concepts to be measured. And one more slide. When a final survey question as posed to a respondent fails to ask about what is essential for the research question, we have a specification error. In other words, the construct implied in the survey question differs from the intended construct that should be measured. This is also referred to as a measurement that has low construct validity. As a result, the wrong parameter is estimated and research objective is not met. So my message is that please pay attention also to the conceptual questions before you start formulating the questions to the questionnaire.